Well, good morning and welcome back to 570 News Midday on 570 News and Rogers TV. It is 11:05. Very glad that you could be along. This is something that I can definitely relate with. I have a book here that I should probably show if you're watching us on Rogers TV. It is called What to Consider If You're Considering University: New Rules for Education and Employment. There it is. And it is written by Ken Coates and Bill Morrison. Ken Coates joins me in studio right now. Hi, Ken. How are you?
Great to be here, sir.
Thanks so much for doing this. Now, you are a former dean of the Faculty of Arts at the University of Waterloo.
Absolutely. Had a wonderful, wonderful time here. Great university, great city, great region.
So you know all about the region then?
I know well. I'm very, very impressed. I'm a real advocate for the whole sort of Kitchener-Waterloo region, Communitech, all of its activities and all that kind of stuff. I had a chance to sort of tell people in many, many parts of the world about this place.
Yeah, well, that, you know, and we were at the Communitech Tech Leadership Conference a few weeks ago, and I have to tell you, I am stunned, I am impressed just by all the talent here, everyone with so many different ideas just here in this region, 1,000 startup companies. Like, it's just amazing. It's so great to be a part of.
It is really interesting. And I think the folks here, to be honest, don't mean to be critical, but take it a bit for granted. It's sort of just the way it is, right?
Yeah.
New companies and new buildings, and RIM has its wonderful heyday, but then, Christie Digital has its time, and OpenText. I spend a lot of time in the rest of the country, and a lot of places would just like a smell of this place.
Yeah, yeah.
They'd like to know what's going on. What's in the water at Waterloo, as David Johnson used to say.
Yeah, exactly. No, see, you hit the nail on the head there. What's behind this book? How did this come out?
Well, I've been a university administrator and faculty member for a very long time. And in honesty, I think we've grown the university system too far. We have a lot of students who aren't really sure why they're there. I think what I describe as career paranoia across the land, even if it's not necessarily always warranted, parents are really concerned about the kids growing up and leaving home. You know, the whole business of failure to launch and the fact that in North America, the average age of kids leaving home is 27 years. Parents are worried about what their kids are going to do. The young people are worried about what they're going to do. You know, elementary school teachers are talking to their kids about classes about going to university or going to college. We don't have confidence in the future anymore, and we don't know what the right path is. You know, it used to be a time in the 1960s, 1970s, if you went off and got a university degree, you sort of said, where do I want to go? I got six
success.
Or seven.
Yeah, it meant success.
Yeah, there were pretty obvious lines. Now it gets narrower and narrower. You know, if I get into the right program at the right institution, I'll have a better chance. But, 5 years ago, people were taking education degrees because they thought that was the opportunity for a middle-class life.
Yeah.
Massive overproduction of education students. Massive serious underemployment and unemployment in the sector. Lots of really destroyed dreams. So we're sort of written the book basically to sort of tell parents and young people that they should think very carefully about where they're going. There's a whole range of options. University is one, but it isn't the only one. And that you have to make sure that people focus on the match. You know, what is that young person good at? What do they really want to do? Get parents to back off. Parents want their kids to be lawyers or accountants or engineers or doctors or something like that. You know, parents have to back off and say, for some kids, that's the wrong path. And we want to sort of try to get people thinking carefully about where they're going, what the right options are, what the possibilities are best for them.
Let me tell you my story. At 17 years old after high school, I had applied to the University of Windsor and other universities for a program that I really had no clue. I didn't have anything about. I didn't know anything about it. A sociology program / criminology. My dad told me, you're going to university. And I don't fault him for telling me that you're going to university. My dad was born in Poland and he came here. He wanted the best for me. And so, I don't fault him for telling me that. But I didn't say no. I didn't ever question what my dad told me to do. So I went to university. I went to the University of Windsor. I took sociology and criminology. And, looking back at it right now, I had no idea what I wanted to do. None. No idea what I wanted to do. And money was being spent on the university. Anyway, so after university, I came back. I couldn't find a job. I still didn't know what I wanted to do. I was working as a security guard. And I went back to college. I went back to Conestoga College. I took a radio broadcast program. And here I am. So we're seeing that more and more often, aren't we? That where people are going to university, they're getting that education, and then they need to do something to get a job.
Well, and it's interesting. I mean, the research shows overwhelmingly that people go to university and the parents get their kids to go to university because they think it's going to get them a job. If the goal is education, fantastic. If you want to study sociology or history or biology or economics, that's amazing, right? If your mind is open and you're curious about the world, an education is one of the greatest gifts parents can give to a kid. If, however, you're sitting there saying, go there because I want you to get a job, and I want you to take this program because that'll get you the job that you want, and then when you get through it, oftentimes holding your nose or suffering as you go, right, or getting excited about something else and going in a different direction, and then you graduate and you can't find work. You know, you're devastated. Everybody's devastated because that's not the plan. So, I think community colleges are fantastic opportunities. They should be first choice for many more students than they are. The polytechs in this province and across the country are amazingly successful. They should be the first choice, not second choice.
But that's
right?
A difficult thing for some parents to admit. I mean, that's difficult to say, my son or daughter is not cut out or doesn't have what it takes to succeed in university. Because that's the other thing. Not everybody that goes to university graduates.
This is the tragedy, you know, because first off, you know, why do we think university is easy? University is extremely difficult.
Yes, it is.
You know, we have about 30-35% of young high school graduates going to university. The number should probably be closer to 25%, maybe even 20%. That's the number of people who have the intellectual ability, the curiosity, and the motivation to succeed. So you bring in people who, there's universities in this province of Ontario who are accepting students in into the mid to low 60s. You know,
really?
You realize what it takes to get 65% in a high school these days? That's not a huge accomplishment.
Much, yeah.
So then you're going into university, you smash up against a wall. Some universities have 25 to 50% dropout rates in their first year. What a waste of human resources. And people go there thinking, I've been told I can succeed, the universities let me in, and I fail. So the higher quality universities are more restrictive. The ones that are more desperate for students are more open-ended. They have high dropout rates, very high dissatisfaction rates. And it's not that universities are bad. Universities are fantastic. But there's a range of options out there. So what happened on the way to Nirvana, what happened that convinced all the parents and the governments across the country that you have to have university graduates? We need university graduates. We need community college graduates. We need polytech graduates. We need way more apprentices. We need entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs don't have to actually go to university. There's a movement in the United States called unschooling, where you basically deliberately decide not to go on to advanced education. And there's a major philanthropist who, I can't remember how many millions of dollars he donated, but imagine if Mike Lazaridis or Jim Balsillie said, you know, I'm going to pay students not to go to university. And he gives them $100,000 and says, build your own business. And the people apply and they get in and he gives them whatever, however much money it is. And some of them are really successful. And they graduate without going to university because they have a different kind of spark. So an entrepreneur might need a university if they want to be a high-tech kind of person. They might just want to, you know, do male cosmetics online,
right?
In which case, university is not very necessary.
We're going to take a quick break. I do want to talk more about the book. I want to kind of go over some of the other options that are available that you've been mentioning. And by all means, if you have any questions, Ken, you're open for some questions. There might be some parents listening that are concerned or, you know.
Absolutely.
People might be applying right now or maybe just have applied for next year. So the numbers are coming your way. We're going to take a quick break and we'll take some of your calls and emails and we'll have more with Ken Coates, a co-author of What to Consider If You're Considering University. After this on Rogers TV and 570 News. All right. Welcome back to 570 News Midday on 570 News and Rogers TV 1117. Glad that you could be along. We're in studio with Ken Coates. He is the co-author of What to Consider If You're Considering University, New Rules for Education and Employment. That's the book right there. And I should also mention that Ken is no stranger to Waterloo region, being the former dean of the Faculty of Arts at the University of Waterloo. 519-570-2545, locally, out of town, 1-800-570-5715, *570, hands-free on your cell. You can get me by email as well at eric@570news.com. This is Margie. Hi, Margie. How are you?
Hi, good. How are you, Eric?
Good. You have a question?
Yes, it's a question for Ken. Hi, Ken.
Hello, how are you?
Good. I have a question about the IB program for high school, how that affects or complements university.
IB programs are terrific in the sense that they raise the bar. For a whole bunch of reasons, the high school teachers make it very clear that they don't see their job as preparing all students for going on to university. And that's appropriate because that, you know, it's too big a mandate. I don't know how high school teachers cope with all the different demands on them to do absolutely everything. The IB program basically separates out the academically gifted students, the ones who are super motivated, and puts them in a special class. What happens, there's two parts to it. Number one is you actually get credit towards some university programs. If you get high enough grades, then you actually get credit toward a couple of courses off in your first year. So that's a saving.
That's a plus. Yeah.
That's a good thing. But the other part is that actually you start getting early preparation for the academic environment. The teachers expect more. The assignments are harder. They're more demanding. In my experience, students who've come out of the IB programs have actually been well suited for the transition to university. And here's another way to look at this. The average student that goes to university in Canada sees about a 10% drop in their high school, their grades from high school. So if they're a 75% high school student, you know, they're a 65% or lower university student. They're 85 in high school, they end up at 75 or below. Right. Okay. And so that's pretty normal. And the reason is that the expectations at university are top of the mark. You know,
And you're in a classroom with, 300 other people, and there's not that, maybe one-on-one, mentorship, right?
Not that there always is in high school, to be honest.
Well, true. Yeah.
But absolutely. But you're also in the, there's a self-selection process. In high school, you're there with 100% of the kids of your age cohort. Even with the overabundance of students at university, you're there with, the top 30%. It's more competitive, but also we haven't been very good at Canada at working at the gap between high school and university. So what happens is we sort of, you finish high school, everybody tells you you're wonderful. Basically, the whole purpose of education is to tell kids they're amazing. There's something really wrong with that. They then come to university, and the university say, okay, we know what you have to learn, so you got to get down and buckle down and do it. What the IB programs do is they're a really wonderful bridge. For the students who can get into those programs, I would go for it.
Yeah, because Brittany's considering either the arts or the IB, but I'm trying to help her understand the IB program.
I'll tell Brittany that her friend says you're supposed to go into you're supposed to go into the IB program. Yeah, if you can get into the IB program, it's one of those things that puts you on a different track. And it's the other thing, Margaret, that's really important here is that it's also a way to sort of figure out if the academic line is the right one. So we don't want parents to make the mistake of assuming that every kid has to go to university or somehow they're a failure. By doing the IB program, you might sit there and think, I don't want to study history, biology, mathematics at this level. I'm really, really interested in baking. Or I have this wonderful technological capacity and I work on video games. There's a whole range of options out there. So part of what I'm trying to encourage everybody to do is to sort of not narrow down what you're up to and sort of make sure that you don't prejudge for your children what you want them to be.
Yeah.
That might be the wrong thing to do.
Right.
Margie, thanks so much for the phone call.
Thanks, Ken.
Take care.
Bye-bye. That is Margie. One of the problems, I'll tell you why. Here's why you mentioned that telling the kids that they're amazing at the end of high school. There's a problem with that and I'll tell you why. I can't remember the last time I've been told that I'm amazing in my workplace. That's the problem. No, I say that as a joke, but you come into the real world after being told that you're amazing, and it's different here. So it's different out here.
It's way different, and I think there's two parts to that. Number one is I'm always nervous with this idea that students are told you can be anything you want to be. That's simply not true, right? I wanted to be a Major League Baseball player. Am I a Major League Baseball player? I was nowhere near good enough. I wanted to. I worked for hours. My fingers bled. I put holes in the garage door throwing baseballs at it. I could not be a Major League Baseball player. And telling people that they can be anything they want to be is not the right message. If you pick something you want to do and you work really hard, you get a chance at doing it. That's very different from, you can be anything. I worry about that.
Yeah, you're definitely going to be commander of the International Space Station.
Well, it just doesn't work that way. Look at all the people who apply to be an astronaut, and the Chris Hadfields are one in a million. Deservedly so, one in a million, right? The flip side of that is when our school system puts so much emphasis on self-esteem, the research shows that self-esteem is not strongly connected to academic performance or career success, which is just the opposite of what everybody seems to think. If you feel good about yourself, you'll be happier and do better in life. Well, that's actually not true. That, in fact, you have to be driven. You have to be sort of a bit uncertain about yourself. You have to come in every day to this job thinking, that was a pretty good interview yesterday. I'm going to do it even better. I'm going to connect with my audience even more effectively today.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that drive to improve yourself, if you just say, I'm wonderful, everybody thinks I'm great, there's going to be a pink slip under your door one day.
Are you forecasting the future?
No.
Okay. What to consider if you're considering university, new rules for education and employment. That is the book. Let's talk about something that I think is very important. We kind of touched on it during the break, Ken, and that is the job market. How much should parents and people be looking at the job market before they're making a decision of what to do after high school? Because you mentioned that with technology and how quickly it's progressing, there is no way of knowing what the job market is going to be like in 5-10 years.
So the short answer is, that's a great question. The short answer is, you have to be really careful. Because if you look at the job market circa 2014, your kids, if they go to university, are going to graduate 4 or 5 years from now.
Right.
You have no idea what it's going to look like then. And people are bad at forecasting. Right now, employers in North America work on a simple model that if you can find a machine that costs $100,000 and you can replace a worker with that machine, you go ahead and do it. If it costs $200,000, you don't do it. But if it got, so people are being replaced by machines left, right, and center. A big part of the manufacturing collapse in Southern Ontario has been robots, mechanization, plus global competition and what have you. So what people should do is not get slavishly around the look and say, oh, gee, there's a whole bunch of vacancies as welders in Fort McMurray, so I'm going to be a welder. 5 years from now, they might all be full, right? And so what you have to do is constantly watch the job market. You have to go in as a student, whether you're in college, polytech, or university, watch what's going on, move with the ebb and flow. It might be go in thinking you're going to work in digital media and end up over in medical technologies. Because you have, as you get closer to graduating, you sort of say, okay, something's happening over here. The flip side of this is there's a wonderful book called The Second Machine Age that basically says we are going to see a transformation of our economy and our society through technological means that's absolutely stunning. And I'll use the most basic example. Most people use ATMs and bank online. Every time we do that, we contribute to the destruction of jobs in Canada. The banks hire way fewer people than they used to, because you go to the bank and see how many clerks are there. They're almost always lonely.
Yeah.
There's only one or two of them there. There's nobody lined up behind them because we're doing our banking online. So that simple technology has eliminated thousands of jobs across the country. Multiply that 100 times already and multiply by 2,000 times for 5 years from now. And how many times going down the line? We don't know. And so what we're trying to encourage people to do is to be thinking workers, to be thinking employees of the future. To not make a decision now based on what the job opportunities are circa 2014, but as you go through your education, as you go through life, contemplate where things are going. You know, how long before we have avatars replacing radio announcers? But you also know we've done that, right?
We have this in many
different places, music programs, mm-hmm. where one person does music programs for 2,000 radio stations across North America.
Talk radio is different.
Talk radio is
different, baby. Knock on wood. This is still a wooden desk. I'm knocking on it. We are almost right out of time. I almost feel like we should have had all the major political party leaders in here listening to you talk. I'm just going to throw that out there. Where can people get their hands on the book?
Oh, you can buy the book online from Dundurn Press. It's actually at Chapters stores all across the country and at Kohl's and what have you. And we hope people will find it interesting. We're so saddened by watching so many young people go off to university, college, or polytech without actually thinking through their own lives. And we want young people to take responsibility and control, because nobody else is going to do it for you. And your parents, they'll love you dearly. They're not living your life for you 20 years down the line. You've got to take control. You're 17, you're 18 years old. You don't take control, nobody else will.
What to consider if you're considering university, new rules for education and employment, written by Ken Coates and Bill Morrison. Ken, thanks so much for doing this. Really appreciate it.
You're more than welcome.
We'll be back after this on Rogers TV and 570 News. Good morning. It's 11:34. Welcome back to 570 News Midday on 570 News and Rogers TV. And my thanks once again to Ken Coates, who is the co-author of What to Consider if You're Considering University. If you want to check the book out, as you heard Ken say, it's online everywhere and, of course, in all the bookstores. So once again, that book, What to Consider if You're Considering University, really a great read. So if you have a child that's heading to university, that's applied, that's waiting to hear back, something that you should consider picking up the book and having a read. We talked about this. Bill C-36 just this past Tuesday, and today, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, today is the second reading of the bill, and the anti-human trafficking organization Freedom says that people are supporting sex slavery without even realizing it. And here to help us out with that one is Shay in NVIDIA, and she joined us on the line. Did I get that right, Shay?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Oh, my pleasure.
So you're coming at this from the angle that if this bill, I mean, you're in favor of the bill. Is that fair to say?
Yes, I think that the bill, there is no perfect policy, so there's no perfect bill that's going to come out. But so far, this piece of legislation is the strongest and best piece of legislation that Canada has ever seen that will address and tackle the exploitation and human trafficking in Canada.
So you're coming at this from the human trafficking angle. Now, when it comes to the prostitution side of it, are you just coming at this and saying they go hand in hand?
You really can't look at one without looking at the other.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because there have been a lot of critics about this bill, and they've been saying that it really doesn't address anything, and it kind of misses the point altogether, that if this bill was to come into law, that it would just drive prostitution underground, and then we really wouldn't have solved anything. I mean, are we really looking at protecting the people in the sex trade, or are we just driving them underground?
Well, I think what a lot of Canadians are failing to recognize is that the industry itself is already operating underground. So by saying that it's being driven underground, it's already there. You know, illegal forms of prostitution itself is not illegal, as we know, but the acts around it are illegal. And so for so long, we've already been operating in a state where it is already underground. So is it going to go further underground? Whenever you have, and this is kind of the fundamental that we are also debating, is that you already have people that are operating in an illegal manner, pimps and traffickers, that are not adhering to the current laws that Canada has. So why do we think for one moment that if we legalize this system, that they're going to automatically overnight become non-criminals and that they're going to start actually adhering to the law? And so the notion of that portion of the industry is going to be further driven underground, I do think is more correct, is that we would actually see it being driven further underground if legalization were to actually take place, which is the opposing view that you are hearing if we were to put forward Bill C-36.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, shouldn't this come down to, shouldn't we be talking about protecting the workers and not really looking at the pimps and what have you as much as if we've been focusing on them? And what I mean by that is, say it became legal, mm-hmm. wouldn't it be easier for, let's say, law enforcement to, you know, have better relationships with some of the people in the sex trade worker to provide, you know, some more protection, et cetera? I mean, if we had brothels, for example, you know, if Canadians kind of could get over, you know, that because we always come at it from that, you know, moral standpoint, right? And yet we have liquor stores in every corner, we have internet porn, we have all these other things, and we for some reason can't get over, you know, one of the oldest professions in the book. So I'm just wondering, like, shouldn't we be focusing more on the actual sex trade workers as opposed to focusing on the pimps and making sure that we protect them?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that you brought up in your question. And I think to kind of simply break down three different aspects is, one, it's how society actually recognizes what prostitution is. My position would be that it's actually not the oldest profession. And I know a lot of faith communities will say it's the oldest oppression, and we don't come from it from a faith or a morale standpoint. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I actually would agree with that statement. Others, and within our own team, will say that maybe it's the oldest profession, but it's definitely never been the fairest. And so recognizing that just because something has always existed doesn't mean that it should be inevitable. It doesn't mean that we should tolerate it. It doesn't mean that we should necessarily accept it. And when looking at the root of what actually prostitution is and how you would define what prostitution is, and once you recognize that it is really the violence, not just against women, but just against another human being, because there are males that are involved in this, there are young boys and children, yep, involved. So to just say violence against women, I don't think encompasses the true fullness of that meaning. And so we really need to say, well, what is prostitution at its best. But then further, and I believe the greater question for Canada, is who is actually making up the industry, quote unquote, that we call the sex trade?
Right.
Who is making up what we call prostitutes? The average age of entry into forced prostitution in our country is 13 to 14 years old. So if that's the average age of entry, you have a huge number of people that, quote unquote, make up the sex trade that entered into the industry as a child. And that's an average. So to have the average being that low means we have to have a lot of children that are 9, 10, 11, 12 years old that are being lured, being coerced, and forced into this industry. So at what point do they become a consenting adult? When they turn 18? But if they've entered in at the age of 13, they've lived a life of exploitation for 7 years, 8 years. And so the voices that are being heard right now are less than that 1%. And people, you know, I get asked all the time, well, what if a girl enters in at 25 years old and this is her choice and this is what she wants to do? Again, I go to say, how do you actually define what choice is and applying that to that circumstance? But truly, if she says, you know, wakes up one day and says, I've had a good life, whether you've come from a broken home or not, but you've had a foundation that's been based on love and support from a family, and there's been no sexual abuse, and you just decide to wake up one day and become a sex worker, I will say all power to you. That's a whole other conversation, and you really make up that less than 1%. The voices that are not being heard are the ones that are still in exploitation and on a day-to-day basis being raped 15 to 20 times a day, that actually have no idea that Bill C-36 is even in the courts right now, that it's even before Parliament, because they're being exploited. These are children, young people, that are living a life of exploitation. And the average girl, one girl in Canada, according to the Criminal Intelligence Service of Canada, makes a pimp or trafficker $280,000 a year. It's a major, major industry. There's a lot of money at risk by having Bill C-36 passed for those who are seriously profiting from it. And I think that it's very easy for the less than 1% to say, well, this is our choice, this is what we're wanting to do. And right now, because it's the only voices you're hearing, they are being elevated at a stronger level, which is why we put out our statement that we did, because we really want to educate Canadians to say, look at who is making up this industry of the sex trade. Who is really in it? And if it was your 13-year-old, if it was your 14-year-old, I can't imagine a single parent, a good parent, that would actually want to have their child living this type of lifestyle.
Well, I don't,
especially when it's not their choice.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I don't think that anybody would want their child living this type of lifestyle. I mean, I can't argue with that. Absolutely, but I think that there's almost two conversations. I mean, just listening to everything that you said, I think that there's almost two conversations, because you said if somebody, you know, you brought up the notion of consent. What is choice? Well,
right.
I actually think it's quite simple. If you really want to do it, if that's something that you want to do, then as you said, all the power to you. And that's a completely different conversation. So can't we be looking at this as two different conversations? I mean, you're talking about human trafficking. I don't think there's anybody listening to this, myself included, that would ever argue what you're saying in terms that we don't want 13-year-olds being forced into it. We don't want 14-year-olds being forced into it. But so again, it comes down to, is criminalizing it and making it completely out of sight, out of mind, how is that going to stop that issue of 13, 14-year-olds being forced into it if it's not even in sight anywhere? You know, because this bill, part of it says that, you know, nobody can do anything in public around children anywhere. So what does that leave us with? Train tracks, dark alleyways? I mean, it's just, you know, going to be driven further underground.
So I think, and you raise a good point, and I know that there is confusion even within the public of what is actually a public space.
Yeah.
and even when the minister came out at first with his statement, I know that was a major question even that the media had, and the minister had just kept saying, you know, that the police will use discretion and where a child can reasonably be found. So kind of being left in the fog almost, as, you know, what does that actually mean? And, you know, to break it down, if let's say an illegal brothel is being operated. It's being fronted as a massage parlor. And it happens to be on a street that it could be in a vicinity where there actually could be either, as the legislation reads right now, in a around schools where a child could be reasonably be found, in a faith community, you know, in a more residential area, so forth. If the girl, if a police were to go into that establishment, and that is now entering into a private space. So there are thousands of massage parlors that are in Toronto currently acting that are not, they're not operating as just massage parlors, but they are illegal brothels operating. What this piece of legislation now would allow law enforcement to do is go into the establishment and make the arrest for the purchasers, and also for the establishment owners, could also be seen as pimps or traffickers, depending on, you know, there's a lot of legal stuff around that, but they could be found guilty of that. And so now the establishment and the conduct is illegal for the first time, but what the police cannot do for the first time is actually arrest and lay charges on the women or children that could be found in this establishment. So it could be, for, you know, example purposes, this could be right beside a school, and the women are not going to be charged for that because this is within a private establishment.
Right.
So that's kind of one of the biggest pieces of confusion. And you're not going to see, there's already thousands of, like I said, thousands of massage parlors that are already operating illegally. So those aren't, we already know that they're there. So it's not, those aren't going to go anywhere or go further underground. They're going to, you know, people who are purchasing sex already know where to go and find it. So the notion of that being pushed further underground, I think it's just the confusion that's is making a lot of the public actually either fearful or just because they actually not understanding what the legislation is actually intending.
Mm-hmm. Shay Invidiata on the line, a founder of Freethem. Shay, before I let you go, let me ask you this, just from the human trafficking standpoint, how big of a problem is it in this country?
Well, we are, I'm not going to say that we're on the rise of human trafficking in Canada, but more and more when our law enforcement are being trained on how to identify victims of trafficking, we are seeing those numbers increase dramatically. I was just with a human trafficking unit yesterday who said last year they laid 4 charges, and this year they have 54 new cases year to date.
Wow.
So, and this is just in one region. So we do have a problem that we need to address, and I do believe that the federal government with Bill C-36 is making a very strong, positive attempt to do just that.
Shay, always good to get you on, and you have some great insights, so thank you so much for doing this. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, Shay Invidiata right there. She is the founder of Freethem. Which way do you stand? Which side do you stand on when it comes to Bill C-36? We talked about it earlier this week on Tuesday, and I think there's been a lot of confusion surrounding what the bill actually states. I mean, this legislation has even confused media outlets around the world. It's confused media outlets across the country. It's confused us. It's confused everybody. But I think if you read further into it, there are two sides to this. Either you are for or you're against legalizing prostitution. And what this legislation is suggesting is that it be criminalized. And there are those that say it's going to drive everything further underground and we're not going to be any closer to protecting the people that need protection, while others say that it'll do the exact opposite, as you heard Shay say. Now, she's coming at this from the angle of the human trafficking. They're an anti-human trafficking group. Freethem. I'd love to know how you feel about this one. We'll take a quick break, and the numbers are coming your way. We'll take your calls and emails next on Rogers TV and 570 News.
Maybe it's the oldest profession, but it's definitely never been the fairest. And so recognizing that just because something's always existed doesn't mean that it should be inevitable. It doesn't mean that we should tolerate it. It doesn't mean that we should necessarily accept it.
570 Midday continues with Eric Drozd.
But does it mean that we should always be looking for ways of getting rid of it? And that was Shay Invidiata. She is the founder of Freethem. 519-570-2545, locally, out of town, 1-800-570-5715. *570 hands-free on your cell, on the email, eric@570news.com. Does anyone really think that driving prostitution underground or further underground, Shay mentioned that it's already underground, is going to get rid of it? I mean, I'm having a hard time with that one. This is Scott. Hi, Scott. How are you?
Not too bad. I take a look at this whole thing from a different perspective. It's not something for me. I really don't care about the people that use the facilities. But the point is, to each his own. Who are we to be saying that some person who doesn't have time in their life, maybe for a significant other, shouldn't be able to entertain themselves with the services of these ladies? And on the other side, of men who also prostitute themselves out.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're doing with this law is they're just trying to circumvent what the court has just told them they can't do. They're just we're going to be running down the same court again, spending more taxpayers' dollars to come out with the same result that they did this last time with it, with the law being struck down.
Well, so, you know, Scott, it's look, I get where you're coming from. It's this moral, you know, it's almost like we're trying to be parents, isn't it? It's almost like we have to tell women that it's wrong and that they shouldn't be doing it. I mean, listen, I'm 100% with you. Why are we always in these types of things? As you say, to each their own. If it's something that's not for you, it's not for you. And so I think we should be tasked with having to do the best we can to protect the people that are working in the trade.
I agree. And there is laws out there against assault. There's laws out there against assault on children. The laws are already there. Making it illegal to buy a prostitution or whatever the term is that they term it, that's not going to stop child abuse. And child abuse happens in people's homes. It happens on the street. It happens in these some bad places. But the point is, this law will not fix that.
Yeah. Gotcha, Scott. Good call. Thanks so much. Have yourself a great afternoon. 519-570-2545 locally, out of town, 1-800-570-5715, *570 on your cell, on the email, eric@570news.com. And you can get me on Twitter as well, @EricDrozd. You know, the biggest portion of this legislation that I have a problem with is the not in my backyard reasoning behind it. So you're not allowed to, you know, be trying to solicit. You're not allowed to be anywhere in public that's, you know, anywhere near where children hang out. So pretty much anywhere. You know, what's that going to do? That's going to, you know, drive everybody to the train tracks and you know, dark alleyways and what have you. It's this parent attitude, right, that we have for some reason, you know, have to take the high horse and say that, well, prostitution is wrong. It's just immoral. It's wrong. I think that's the part of the problem and why a lot of people are having an issue with Bill C-36. I mean, all you have to do is Google it and you see there's a lot of backlash about it. Because remember, the government had an entire year to come out with a new set of rules. And basically, they came out with the same ones, except they've gone a step further now to make it all illegal. We're going to leave that one there. Coming up at 12:05, don't know if you heard about this, but in Ottawa, they have replaced streetlights, 700 streetlights on a certain street with LEDs. Some people are loving the dark night sky now. Others say they're too bright and the cost savings involved are not worth the health issues associated with LED. That's next at 12:05 on Rogers TV and 570 News.